Hey everybody, it's Scott Hanselman with Channel 9, and I'm here in Building 99 on the Microsoft campus, and I'm in the hallowed halls of Microsoft Research, talking to researchers John Tong and Gina Vanolia. How are you guys doing?
Doing great.
Now,
doing well.
One of you is here and one of you is very much not here, but this isn't just a video about video conferencing, because you're not just plugged in video conferencing, you have a complete physical virtual presence here, sir.
Right. It's called the Embodied Social Proxy, and it provides not only a video conferencing terminal, but a consistent physical presence for me in meetings and even outside of meetings that over time we've found encourages or enables much more social interaction or connection with my team up in Redmond. So I get to work with Gina closely, even though I'm remote most of the time.
I notice that I am noticing, because I'm someone who works remotely, that you're actually looking at me. And so often when I'm doing remote work, I don't know where the person's looking. They're looking off in the corner, off in space. Is there something tricky that you're doing to actually look at me?
Well, we are very attuned to gaze awareness, and we're developing some tools that help help my gaze be meaningful so that the person on the other side is able to see when I'm looking to the right or directly at them.
And what do we have here? We've got a round table, we've got a pan-tilt zoom camera on top, you've got a big APC that probably gives you maybe, what, an hour of walking around time?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the technology here, right, is a couple of cameras, big LCD because we want John to be life-size, and then the crap below the table, which is just there to support this. This is a science fair project. It's not a technology investigation. What it is a social investigation. This is one pattern that we've built.
Okay.
Probably the more durable pattern is this one. This is George. George is actually off today. You can see that his calendar is showing him off, except he appears to be online anyway. George, what are you doing? He has a little different camera rig here where instead of the round table, he actually has this 140-degree fisheye camera along with the same pan-tilt zoom camera, and then just a webcam that's giving him a basic view of the world. So with where John only gets to see the active speaker fairly centered on the screen, George gets to see a panorama of the room, so he gets to see everybody all the time, and that turns out to really, really matter. Because he can see you even though you're not talking, he can see John staring off into space, he can see who's puzzling at the whiteboard,
mm-hmm.
He can see when anybody turns to him and says, well, what do you think? Where normally in video conferencing, you don't know if somebody's looking at you, especially with something like the round table, which is doing all this active speaker view stuff. You just never know where it's looking.
Yeah, I use a lot of round tables in my regular life, and one of the things that's interesting for the viewers about the round table is that it's got actually five, I think, cameras around a mirror, and then it does two things. When you're using live meeting, it does automatic stitching and gives you a 360-degree view, mm-hmm. but only within live meeting, and it does what's called active speaker view mm-hmm. within Office Communicator, which means that John can see me, and actually if I put my face here on the seam, sometimes you can just ever so subtly see a seam where I exist in half of each of these cameras.
You're
right.
Two noses.
John probably doesn't have as much sense of the space as a fisheye lens would provide.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that you said that was the most significant is that it's not just about putting technology together. Oh, I'm sorry. See, John is making gestures that he wishes to interrupt. Sir.
Just actually, we are taking advantage of that panorama view.
So you are.
To tap that in. And I do get to see that as well as the active speaker view. But I think what we would aim for is that the remote person can see all the reactions and interactions happening in the room rather than being governed by who's speaking at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. And let me ask you this. There's a thing I thought that Gina said that was so interesting was that this is not about going to Fry's and putting together effectively a pile of junk. Mm-hmm. It's about the social aspect of things.
Yes.
So what is the science behind this and the essence of the paper that you wrote?
This came out of some interviews that I had done in Beijing, and I ended up talking with Just coincidentally, three of my five interviews were with people who were the sole outpost for a team that was in Redmond. And I started realizing that maybe this kind of hub and satellite configuration was not uncommon. And then George, who had been here in Redmond in this fully co-located team, moved off to Maine. He ended up as the only remote, and he was really worried about keeping a presence. So I kind of rehydrated some of the thinking that I was doing around those developers in Beijing and thinking, well, what could we do to give him a physical presence that would combine aspects of awareness and video conferencing? So we're very focused around that hub and satellite configuration, which is a very very different set of requirements and problems from, you know, one team split in two locations or everybody in a separate location.
It also turns out to be the most popular distribution for feature crews here at Microsoft, where one remote person is part of a team that's co-located in Redmond, largely.
Yeah. Hmm. 13% of feature crews are split across our hub and satellite, like 7% are barbell configuration, two sites, and then it's down in the noise for the other configurations.
So in the two-site instance, you see a lot of talk about this many large high-definition screens across a table, the Cisco scenario. Mm-hmm. When you take a round table like this, and each of us has the same table split in half, and there's a portal, a virtual portal into space. But this notion of having an individual with a physical presence, you have to roll him around, right?
Yeah.
So you're not able to move.
Well, the two things are, this office, dedicating this office to John and George is an important part of the design. It's one that we kind of sneaked up on. We didn't have it in our brains when we began, but we evolved into this practice, and it turns out to be really, really crucial for having meetings with John and George, or John and George together, where you don't have to do the physical move the cart thing. Half the meetings happen in here, and then half of them happen in meeting rooms or lecture rooms or even in the lab, right, John?
Right. Out in open areas, I've seen demos like of a surface out in a lab working area and was able to participate at that context.
Wow. Now, if you're going to have a conversation with George, though, and you're here as well, so the three of you are having a conversation, is George seeing video of video, and does that become a problem?
Today, that's the way it happens. John, you can talk to this better.
It's right. We're meeting through the air acoustically and visually. But this is exactly one of the product implications this work has illuminated by the kind of connections we'd like OC and our tools to support are a more flexible way of connecting video to video and integrating a live site.
So you did this to write a paper to achieve some end goal, right?
We did it because we were scratching our own itch.
Okay.
Supporting George, then John came on a few months later, and as a remote from the get-go, but the goal is to solve a problem, which is when you have a hub and satellite team, it's easier for the hub people to stay aware of and talk to and engage with, and brainstorm with the people who are co-located, and that person who's off-site is out of sight and out of mind.
Yeah. I really struggle with that as a remote person myself. I went to a meeting today. It was a big meeting with kind of all the leadership team. And as I came in, everyone's like, oh, you're here. Oh, you're here. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're here. How long are you here? I didn't know you were here.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me feel so far away, even though I'm here.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was very frustrating. I was trying to figure out, though, how do I solve this problem? Now, I'm just one individual, though. I have a team of six guys that are all themselves remote.
Yes.
We use Office Communicator a lot, but I have a situation where the hub and spoke situation is that my six guys are a unit, and we are the thing. I guess that would be a barbell, using your terminology.
Or even fully distributed?
I guess you're right. You're right, because we none of us are located in the same place. You're absolutely right. We are, if you draw a dotted line around our group and say, it's those guys, you know, we actually kind of transcend location. Most mm-hmm. people don't know where each of us is.
Okay.
I'm the only one within driving distance.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a little bit of a, well, I can just drive up, it's 4 hours.
Yeah.
Kind of a benefit, but, yeah. you know, Florida and, you know, those kind of places, mm-hmm. those guys are screwed. They're screwed, basically.
Exactly.
So,
yeah.
So I think, actually, we would like to apply this iterative design methodology to other distributed topologies because they have their own challenges. I mean, this fully distributed setting is different from a hub and satellite setting, whereas one of the things that we complain about, or at least I do, is that because I'm the only person remote, everyone else has a social environment and I'm kind of the only one left out, whereas the fully distributed setting has a different social dynamic. I mean, they're somewhat on a level playing field, but they have other challenges of, you know, not having any mm-hmm. kind of center of gravity. So the one of the goals of our work is to be able to look at these different topologies of collaboration and figure out how to fit tools to meet those needs.
Do you think that it would change if you could move?
We've been intrigued by that. Robotic solutions often get mentioned. I think what it would allow me to do is maybe roam the halls a little bit and do some of that drive-by networking that right now I had to kind of rather formally schedule a meeting with someone to discuss ideas, whereas if I were up there, I'd be able to drop by more casually with some people.
Or even just troll the halls to look for somebody to talk to. Do you ever have that situation where you want to bounce an idea?
That is the worst problem. And people at Starbucks don't want to talk to me.
Exactly. And what about your kid, though?
Oh, yeah. The two-year-old has no interest in managed code development, I'm afraid.
That's so weird.
It's
I did at that age.
Really? it's such a frustrating feeling because also as a remote worker, when we feel disconnected, we feel like, well, we'll be the first to go. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If things bad things happen, the mm-hmm. person who is out of sight will be the one who. Well, we don't need John. He's never around.
Mm-hmm. So we've been living with two of these two cars for about a year. And this summer, we built up four more and put them into four product groups, who were purely hub and satellite.
Mm-hmm.
And what we found was that for the one site that was a person who had been in his team for 3 years, it helped, but it didn't help tremendously. For the people who were more junior, both in their careers and more junior in their teams,
mm-hmm.
In fact, all three of the other sites were that person had been on their team for 8 months, which is by coincidence.
Right.
Within the 5 or 6 week deployment that we had into that team, we saw a measurable uptick in how integrated they were in the team. And we got these great quotes about, you know, before we didn't really know what this guy did for us.
Mm.
And now he's part of us. He's one of us.
Wow.
And just through having this kind of stupid science fair project.
So let me ask you this, and forgive me as I continue to put things in the context of my own experience,
mm-hmm.
but that's
the
only one that I know.
Yeah, totally makes sense.
So Phil Hack is a program manager in ASP.NET,
mm-hmm.
and he kindly donated his machine under his desk and a big monitor,
mm-hmm.
and we have a 9-to-5 chat going on, basically
mm-hmm.
a portal.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than a physical presence, an avatar
mm-hmm.
locally
mm-hmm.
situation,
mm-hmm.
9 a.m., I call Skype because
mm-hmm.
I couldn't get other tools like Office Communicator to auto-answer.
Oh, we've...
So I call Skype, and basically there's a wormhole.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that mm-hmm. there's that it is a representation of Phil or myself.
Mm-hmm.
There is simply a hole in space-time.
Yeah.
Problems, the
or
major...
Space,
or space, that's a good point. Well, if you count the lag. But you're right. There's a hole in space.
Yeah.
And the thing that we've discovered is that I can't see anything.
Mm-hmm.
Off-the-shelf webcams have just virtually no field of vision,
mm-hmm.
90 degrees or something like that. So all someone has to do... Yeah, all I have to do is just move like that,
yeah.
And now I can't see.
Yeah, well, this is... We did work to find the webcam with the 70-degree field of view.
Ah.
But that is nothing compared to the 140-degree field.
And is this something I would buy, or is this an expensive thing? I mean,
this is $650.
That's just $50. So
yeah, exactly. So it's expensive, but you know, it's just a lens on a webcam, basically.
Oh, is that what you've done?
Well, I mean, ultimately, it's
sure.
There's nothing fundamentally interesting about that, other than it's a decent quality
yeah,
lens.
Yeah, it's a Fuji fisheye lens that's been welded to some kind of a surveillance camera, a security
exactly.
camera.
Exactly. These are both security cameras, which is why they're so damn expensive.
Ah, interesting.
But yeah, George can see me even as I think this is about where my nose starts to go out of the frame.
Yeah, so he literally has peripheral vision.
He literally has peripheral and foveal.
Mm.
So he can use this camera then to look at any given person in the room or stuff on the table or stuff on the whiteboard. In fact, you notice that John's camera is pointed over there at the whiteboard.
Can you move that camera, John?
Yeah. Let me just get that.
Were you not using your camera, John?
I wasn't, because I was so engaged in the conversation here.
Slacker.
He's giving me the side eye with the camera right now.
Yeah. I have to whack him upside the monitor.
These kinds of research type things are so fascinating to me because you've got like some machined plexiglass that you've kind of developed, and you know, just it's not productized, but it's definitely not duct tape.
Yeah, it has to. So.
Oh, there he goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you have a big console on your side that you're able to do this with.
Actually, it's very. This is the interface that we're playing with that tries to make it very easy to almost just pan and zoom within the peripheral vision, so I can, you know, have a context for where I'm focusing in on with the pan tilt zoom camera.
So I wonder, comparing my wormhole prototype.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting only in its pervasiveness, in the
mm-hmm.
sense that it's always on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have, John has a quality level and a mic level, and there's some extra information here. Now, George, who's not here, has an interesting piece of data that I don't have at all, which is, where is George?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can actually stop by and I have know that he's out of the office. Or working at home, apparently.
And you know what time it is in his part of the world.
Oh, is that what that is? That's a good point.
Yeah, so he's in Maine. So knowing that it's almost 6 his time, it's an important thing to know.
Was that something you added right away? Did you know that this status screen was crucial?
Yeah, that was absolutely part of the mock-up that I'd done long, actually, before George ever said, I'm moving to Maine, need a solution. And then the network quality monitor is just because we found that sometimes the network is really bad and we just have to resort to audio-only call, or even we've resorted to cell phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Because
really?
some days between here and Maine, or even between here and Mountain View, the network is just, it's fussy.
So you're an older prototype. You're the T800, but the T1000 over here, is this just a USB speakerphone?
Just a USB speakerphone, yeah. Just off the shelf. This is, I think, $250
mm-hmm.
or so.
Wow. So I could, you know, one could completely build this, but help me understand the relationship between Microsoft Research and places like the Office Communicator team. You feed your data into those teams for planning? Is that how that works?
So we have built up this concept and developed it through iterative design process, and we're talking with them, we're engaged with them on a number of different fronts about what's important to us from a technology perspective and from a UX perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't expect Microsoft to ever sell carts on, but I think some of the ideas that we're exploring here are quite relevant for productization. Now, when that will
sure.
reach priorities, that's...
Because the thing that's so frustrating to me as a remote worker and all my remote friends is that this is a problem. For me, this
mm-hmm.
is not a problem. I mean, help me out here, John. This is the problem.
Right. And one of the things I think this project has identified, it's touched, I think, with a lot of people within Microsoft that do share that problem. And in a sense, we're... trying to draw some attention to not only is it a problem for us as a company, but probably for our customers. And so there is an opportunity to really do something innovative here that not only would help Microsoft do business better, but might translate into some business opportunities with our customers.
Yeah.
And Cisco and HP have really defined telepresence as being the big $250,000 room that connects to another big $250,000 room.
Right.
And that's not the only game in town. That's appropriate when you have CEOs negotiating mergers.
Exactly. Exactly.
But that's not, you know, 99% of people who are working in a remotely are not CEOs negotiating mergers.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting to me to see what different people value. Like, my team recently all upgraded to LifeCam Cinema HDs, and internally the Office Communicator software is really the only piece of software that I know of today that supports 720p. We all have big rectangular monitors, unlike your square monitor, and you're running, it looks like, probably 640 by 480.
Yeah. We should probably bump.
The 720p requires a quad processor and needs two of the processors dedicated to the encoding of the...
Rock on.
And it's clear, right? I mean, when you go, oh, wow, you know, John has pores. You know? Right now you don't. It's a big...
Something you don't want to see.
Yeah, exactly. But seriously, yeah, people in HD is really amazing. But the amount of bandwidth it requires and the amount of processing power is insane. Even my portal with Phil, that's not feasible. But interestingly, while they put so much work into a high-definition camera, the lens is still not high quality. I still have no ability to tilt or zoom.
The audio is probably the
same.
Which I think is much more of a problem.
That's a very interesting point, because I put a lot of work when I do my podcasts into really high quality stuff, but it's the same $5 off-the-shelf echo-canceling microphone as before. And the difference between a $50 webcam and a little bit of a field of vision or some pan tilt zoom is a 10x or more. I think that we should tell them to make us a $100 pan tilt zoom wide angle, and that would solve, from my point of view, financially, as someone who must have this but cannot afford it.
Right,
I can buy the cart, I can visualize that part, I'm good with the battery, I'm good with the computer, I probably would spring for this. That's your money right there.
Exactly. Actually, ironically, okay, that's...
Help us out here.
$1,250, $650. The next most... Actually, the other big ticket item here...
The cart.
...is the cart itself. I mean, I got a fancy
It's a lovely cart. I must give you credit for that.
It has this beautiful capability where George could be at seated height or be at presentation height.
George is standing up to give his talk.
He's maybe 5 feet tall, but...
Still, the point is made.
Better than...
He certainly has more of a presence when he's full height like that.
Exactly. And things like that are important, but doesn't have to cost the $700-$900 that this particular card costs.
Very cool.
That's all just because this is a science fair project.
So where can people go to learn more about this project?
We have a page on research.microsoft.com.
I'll put links in the show notes as well.
/projects/ESP project.
ESP project.
Yes. It stands for Embodied Social Proxy.
Embodied Social Proxy.
There's an... My academic colleagues have developed this concept of a social proxy, which is a lightweight on-screen representation of people in a chat room, basically. It's a beautiful system called Babel that Tom Erickson and Wendy Kellogg and others worked on at IBM. And so he had this concept of, well, let's just represent each person in that chat room as something other than an item in the list. So I took that idea and said, well, let's move that into the physical world, get that off of the screen and onto the floor. So embodied it.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us here at Channel 9. And hopefully we'll see this on shelves at Best Buy soon. maybe not, but thanks so much for your time and your work.
Thanks, Scott.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Scott.